Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:32 and a half, Monday the 30th of June, to the 30th of March, I should say. Might be the 30th of June before we're done here. Members today here are Senator Egan, Senator Wilson, myself, Stedman. We have a quorum. We have today a presentation. There are no bills on the agenda for those listening at home that... But we do have an overview of the harbor system of the state. So with that, we've got some representation from DOT, if they can come forward. Michael Luskins. You guys can introduce yourselves for the record and take us through the presentation, and then we'll probably have some general questions and so small... group in here today, and there's only on the agenda, so we'll keep it fairly informal. As far as if someone has a question, we'll just stop and deal with it, if that's all right with you guys.
Fine with us.
And then we'll have some other broader questions on the end. With that, go ahead.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Michael Lukshin. I'm the State Ports and Harbor Engineer for the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
I'm Lance Merrick, Chief Engineer and Director of Design and Engineering Standards at Statewide, and just here to support Mike. He'll be doing the presentation.
In this overview, I'd like to cover the following topics. The first will be the purpose and needs for Alaska's port and harbor facilities. There are at least 500 public, commercial, and private such facilities statewide, as shown on this map. We only really track the publicly owned facilities. I also want to emphasize that port and harbor facilities serve a diverse maritime users, including commercial fishermen, recreational boaters, freight and fuel tug operators, tourism-related charters, and Alaska Native subsistence hunters and fishers. The conditions of a lot of these small boat harbors vary significantly based on the economic viability of the municipality that owns them, along with the state. Numerous facilities are unable to maintain or repair aging infrastructure due to lack of local funding. In addition, waning state revenue is an impediment to providing grant funding and capital investment to both the municipal and state-owned ports and harbors. For example, the Port of Anchorage, which receives 85% of all consumer goods entering the state, is unable to adequately fund a needed modernization project. And the last topic I'll talk about will be the lack of a deep-water Arctic port, which is a barrier to providing infrastructure necessary to develop Alaska's resources and carry out national strategic goals in the region. So simply, port and harbor purpose is that they provide for the movement of people, the transfer of goods and services. They provide for access to nearby and distant Alaska villages and communities. They enhance the mobility of a dynamic and mobile fishing fleet. They're obviously a safe harbor, a refuge for commercial fishermen, marine operators, and recreational users. And they're a waterway portal for the public's benefit. Alaska has over 43,000 miles of coastline. And the majority of Alaskans, including those residents of Anchorage, all live within 10 miles of the state. It's 10 miles of the coast. Alaska certainly is a coastal state. So according to my records, there are 62,026 vessels registered of all types in Alaska as of the end of last year. There are many thousand more vessels that are unregistered or transient vessels that pass through Alaska. This number of 62,000 does not include those documented vessels which are managed by the Coast Guard. I'll also point out that Alaska does not title boats, which is an interesting feature. Alaska has a complex and modern and very high capital-intensive investment fishing fleet that requires maximum efficiency to maintain their viability as they have to fish multiple fish seasons. This is because of the Alaska's fish management system and limited entry areas. Harbors are spaced usually wherever there is a municipality, and as such, this minimizes travel time for fishermen or boaters that are traveling. Weather is a significant risk throughout Alaska, as vessels have to transit between these harbors or engage in the fishing grounds of Alaska. And the last need would be that the public demands access to its waterways to pursue its cultural interests. So for the department, our perspective is that we are here to support and work with local government to provide navigation improvement to Alaska. And the Alaska Department of Transportation does this by managing across all modes of transportation. Normally, that's done by working with the various federal agencies that I show on this slide, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Federal Highway Administration, and so forth. But for the federal projects on the marine side, we really only have one agency that will support us, and that is the Corps of Engineers. The Corps of Engineers, though, is unique in versus the other federal agencies that you're more familiar with, because they essentially fund projects based on an earmark process. Unlike the other programs, which have a formula-based process for funding transportation projects, and we can expect a yearly allocation of funds, that's not so with the Corps. Everything has to go through Congress. Everything's a specific appropriation. So as a result, most port and harbor projects in Alaska are funded entirely with state dollars. And this happens through capital funds that are given to the Department of Transportation, state grants that are given to the municipalities, or by state-backed general obligation bonds. So my office works to manage these DOT investments in navigation projects. I try to maximize the federal investment, which is specifically the core projects for Alaska's infrastructure. I work on policy and guidance for our regions across all the various components within DOT. We keep maintain a database of the condition of the DOT-owned facilities, and then we work to assist local government with their needs, providing either technical assistance from our engineering side of the house or financial assistance if there are state funds that have been granted to us. And then I also minister the 50-50 matching municipal harbor grant facility program, which I'll talk about in more detail in the later slides. So the Department of Transportation is the largest harbor owner in the state of Alaska. There are at least 132 port and harbor facilities statewide. There were originally 102 that were built by the state of Alaska. Most of these were built by the old Division of Waters and Harbors, which was part of the Department of Public Works. When the Department of Public Works combined with the Department of Highways in 1978 to form what is now the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, most of those, we inherited all those facilities. And those facilities were generally built in the 60s and 70s, as the slide shows. But we have transferred a large portion of those harbors to the individual municipalities. And so today, the department is only responsible for 20 harbor facilities. We don't own any ports anymore. Included with that is about 20 seaplane floats. I work closely with our statewide aviation section to manage those seaplane floats. 12 of the seaplane floats are standalone facilities, and 8 of them are still attached to some harbor facilities. So, harbor deferred maintenance. The department received $4 million in maintenance funds across all of our modes last year, of which harbor maintenance got 5% of that, or in other words, $80,000 for harbor maintenance. There is no dedicated harbor maintenance staff. We're dependent on maintenance from those folks that are in one of our maintenance stations that's on the road system. The average age of our facilities is quite old, as shown here, 29 years old. We have one that's quite even older, 66 years old. But we have been working, thanks to support from the legislature, is to replace and recapitalize these facilities. So since 2007, we've worked to address our backlog, which used to be at about $27 million, and now sits at $15 million. Worth of deferred maintenance. We've replaced several projects as described here, And we have one project that's currently in construction that will be the Port Alexander Outer Float Project, which upon completion will be transferred to the city of Port Alexander. So that will further lessen our deferred maintenance backlog and responsibilities. We're also looking to remove some harbors. We'll have to do some further investigation on that. We did remove one harbor in Hyder in 2010, but that deserves further consideration.
You have a question, Senator Ian?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, because when I was mayor of Juneau a long time ago, the state transferred a bunch of state harbors to my municipality, and we got like 10 cents on the dollar, but then we're left with maintaining them. How would a community like Port Alexander, with very little or no tax base, be able to maintain that harbor?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, the city of Port Alexander will have to impose fees upon the users of that facility to maintain it. But on the good side is that this project will leave them with a brand new facility, along with the other facility that we replaced in 2011, the Port Alexander Inner Float. So they'll essentially have new facilities, and they'll just need to collect funds to keep those in good shape for the long term, for a 30 to 40 year design life, and hopefully collect enough additional funds to fund a replacement. In addition, I'll offer they will be able to utilize the Harbor Facility Grant Program to maximize any local contributions they have through this program to recapitalize their harbor in the future.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Engineer, the problem is the deferred maintenance fund is almost depleted. So, I mean, because I have a community in my district, Gustavus, who is having the same issues.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, what I can offer is that Port Alexander will have new facilities upon transfer, and it'll be up to the community and the city of Port Alexander to set fees that are reasonable to maintain that facility. They have agreed to this idea. We are not doing deferred maintenance at other locations. We're basically taking all of our available funds and putting it in investment here in Port Alexander, subject to the city of Port Alexander taking over the facilities.
I'd like to add also, Port Alexander's case, it's a trolling port, mainly trollers historically and probably other user groups now, but they have the ability as a commercial harbor to generate some money and pay for their own facilities, much like all the other communities. And I think as we move down through the ports and harbors over the years and get to the smaller ones, there seems to have sometimes it's difficult for the smaller communities to recognize the state is not going to build harbors for free. If they want to build their own docks, they can do that if they want. Nothing's stopping them, but it is very beneficial to them to be involved in the Harbor Matching Grant Fund and the maintenance program to get help from the state, but I'm not quite sure how Gustavus, you know, composition of that community is relative to Port Alexander, but clearly Port Alexander is a commercial harbor and should be able to take care of itself.
Next slide. So as a result of economic downturn in the mid-80s, the department began a program in 1986 to preserve these publicly owned port and harbor facilities by transferring to local government. By transferring harbor ownership to the municipalities, the department will have, and the department and the state will have fewer harbor facilities to inspect, prioritize, and maintain. Since local municipalities are the primary beneficiaries of these port and harbor assets, transfers maximize local decision-making and allow the municipalities to make the final operational and maintenance priority decisions. Plus, this keeps and helps locals maintain control and keeps the department in trying to provide sort of a state oversight on issues that system-wide that may be better handled on a local level. This state to local ownership is an objective that satisfies the administration and the legislatures. It also strengthens the state's position that fees must be increased to cover operating expenses and future replacement costs. It also reduces a long-term burden on the state. Any questions?
No questions?
No.
So to date, we've transferred 82 harbor facilities, as depicted in this slide. The first harbor transfer was to the city of Kluwak. The blue line on this slide are the locally owned harbors, which is on an upward trend. The red line is the DOT-owned harbors, which obviously is going down. The green bars denote the number of transfers that we did yearly.
If we could back up, you mentioned Kluwak. You said that I wasn't quite sure if I heard you correctly. It was the
correct. The Kluwak City Dock was transferred in 1986 to the city of Kluwak. That was the first transfer that we did. So we've had this program in place for the last 30 years.
Okay. And on that, on Kluwak, have they, you recollect if they have approached you on rehabbing their dock? I spent some time there this summer. Looks like it's getting close to needing an upgrade.
Senator, through the chair, they have not contacted me. No.
Okay. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the issue is when you gave us our harbors, you really didn't give them to us. You gave us harbors that were in dire need of maintenance. So we got these harbors, and then the municipalities had to pay to refurbish them. So I think you guys got a good deal, not the municipality.
Could you maybe explain in more detail the Harbor 50% matching grant fund for those listening at home and how it's ranked between existing or older transferred facilities, unless that's coming in your slide deck? Is it coming?
Yes, Senator.
Okay, we'll just wait for that. I think, Senator Egan, we're going to go into more detail about that because that's been a subject of great discussion between DOT and the communities for quite a few years, but there's it's not as cut and dry as some people might think.
Through the chair, I would like to make one point known to Senator Egan is that Juneau received seven harbors in 2003 as part of a general obligation bond transfer, and the city did receive $7 million, as I recall, as part of that transfer. I agree with you, Senator, it was probably not enough, but the city did receive some funds. Some cities, like Kluwak, I don't think got any money back in 86. Different things, different situations.
We'll work on that here in a little
yes.
bit in more detail. Okay, go ahead and continue.
So we have four main programs of local government assistance for the municipalities for port and harbor issues. First one is the Deferred Maintenance and Transfer Program. If there's a resolution from an interested community, we will transfer that harbor over to them. Sometimes that comes with money, sometimes it doesn't. It just depends on what's available. We can use harbor deferred maintenance monies to make that happen, but more typically it has been a specific appropriation by the legislature to enable a transfer to happen. The second program that we have is for a certain named port and harbor programs is a debt service program. There was these communities that were named, the Matsu Borough, Valdez, Accutan, False Pass, Accutan, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, the City of Fairbanks, Chignik, and Nome. And our third program is the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Program, which is the state's 50-50 matching grant program, and I have a further slides that will talk a little bit more about that. And the last one is the Corps of Engineer Program. We ask that the cities that are interested in using the Corps of Engineer or working with us for technical or financial assistance through the Corps of Engineers, send us a formal letter, though they can also do that on their own. They don't necessarily need our support. The Corps, if I just take a second here, the Corps really only designs the high-cost rubble mound breakwaters that surround a harbor, and they do the dredging inside that. They do not build any of the floats. So the municipalities or the state is going to be left to pay for that cost. But I will say, thankfully, the Corps has built the majority of Alaska's harbors, so there is limited harbors that still need to be built out, even though we are a growing and young state. The federal funding for these harbors varies with depth. Deeper harbors get less funding. The Corps has one benefit in terms of their program is that they are 100% responsible for any maintenance dredging. So that's not a local expense that has to be borne. So as I said, I'll get to our harbor grant program here.
Maybe just before you jump onto
yes,
that,
I'll go back.
Get off of the slide 11. The bond debt service, could you give us a little bit more of a rundown on that? And I'm just kind of curious. Fairbanks and North Slope Borough, is that
sure.
The Chena River, or are they a coastal town?
No, Senator. Those were unique pieces of statute. The Fairbanks North Star Borough project was for the Eielson Air Force Base schools, major maintenance and upgrades, and the City of Fairbanks project was for a fire station headquarters replacement project. But since they were part of the same piece of legislation, we as a department have just administered them as part of those other harbor and port facility projects.
Okay, so there wasn't a port project. It was unrelated, just put in a political package.
Okay. Yes, Senator.
Senator Egan and Senator Stedman must not have been in the room when that deal was done.
I will say, Senator, the project for the Matanuska-Sitna Borough was for Port McKenzie. All right, the Harbor Facility Grant Program. This is clearly the department's most successful harbor program. The program provides provides priority funding on a one-time basis for former state-owned harbor facilities. We call those Tier 1 harbors. Once that priority is used, then that harbor becomes a Tier 2 harbor. Tier 2 harbors are all other municipal harbors and any new harbors. So over time, the intent of this program will have the outcome that all Tier 1 priorities have been used up, so to speak, and the application pool will be level, and all harbors will compete equally across the board. The program only pays for the construction costs for projects, so that means that these projects are ready-to-go projects. The state provides a 50-50 matching amount, up to $5 million per municipality per year, so it's possible and some cases a municipality can make two applications within the same year as long as they stay below that $5 million cap. We have a minimum in the program of $50,000, and that is to get away from minor maintenance issues that a municipality should be taking care of anyway. So these are really for the major capital intensive projects. Projects are all locally inspired and locally managed, so the department has not controlling what the municipalities want to do with their harbors. It is a competitive process. The department will evaluate and rank projects through a harbor project evaluation board that's comprised of 5 DOT employees from a statewide perspective. And I'll say one of the highlights of the program is the impressive fast delivery time frame for it. We don't have to, since projects are already designed and ready to go, we don't have to wait for planning or other harbor design work to occur. As a result, the average time frame it takes to complete a harbor grant is 14 months once it's awarded.
Okay, before we jump to that next slide, just a little bit more editorializing, I think, on the Harbor Matching Grant Fund, because some folks have been around it more than others. But to Senator Egan's earlier question, the concern of the previously transferred harbors and floats around the coast to the cities and boroughs was a point of contention as far as the dollars that facilitated or were included in the transfer. And we're trying to come up with a way to try to deal with that situation. and rectify it, and also get away from where the state builds a physical asset, municipalities run it, and there is really no major deferred maintenance program going on in it. It gets run down over time just due to wear and tear 20, 30 years out. The rates charged at the time were not commensurate to replacement and or major maintenance. It was basically just a month by month, frankly, expense calculation. So that isn't in the long-term best interest of the state to build facilities, not have them maintained, go back 20 years later and rebuild them. So what we did is put in a 50-50 matching grant, and to qualify for that, you have to have a sinking fund. You have to maintain your harbors. You can't come back to the well. The state will pay half the capital cost, up to $5 million. You can do a harbor in phases if you need to. But five's the cap, and that was a spread the monies, limited monies around the state. Replace your harbor and charge whatever rate needs to be charged to your tenant to make that an ongoing viable entity where the state doesn't have to get involved in again in the future. But in doing all this, we also set it up where the originally transferred harbors have first crack at it. So the issues that Senator Egan, what you mentioned in Juneau, were similar to Petersburg and Ketchikan and Sitka and all around. So those original harbors get first crack at the funds to try to help with that. And as mentioned earlier, when those harbors are not on the list, it opens it up to new harbor construction, brand new facilities. If the communities want to go into the 50% matching grant fund, and they do not have to, it's an optional program. The communities could build their own harbors with their own financing and work with the Corps. But if they go to the state for monies, which the state is willing to help, they have to run it as an enterprise fund, maintain it, have a sinking reserve, and it has caused some indigestion in all the harbors to the tenants, and I'm one of them as a tenant in a couple of harbors, with the rate increases. But when you look at what it costs to build your own dock and drive your own 2 to 4 pilings, if those communities that want to do that want to, smaller communities want to build their own docks, are certainly willing, capable, and we'll help them with what we can with the permit process, and they can build their own docks. But you lose substantial synergy in having the community do it. Port Alexander is a classic example. They could have built their own docks on their own waterfront, or they could go together as a community and buy it at 50% off, and they still have to maintain it, just like you'd have to maintain your own dock or maintain your own house. So I think the program's worked well. It targeted appropriation that we were hoping to have when we started the program was $10 million a year for 10 years. That was almost 10 years ago. And we've fallen short of that from time to time. And then some years were better than others. We're kind of in a tight spot now, so if hopefully the $5 million that's in that Harbor Matching Grant Fund will be there when the budget hits the governor's desk. And next year we'll do another small step. And if we can just keep chipping away. But I think it's very important, the coastal communities, that we keep this program alive and well, because the old system does not work in the long run, where we build it, turn it over, the management to the cities, and basically run it at as lowest cost possible without a replacement and major maintenance until it's, a hazard. And then we, the state, have to step in and do it again. So, Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree entirely. I guess that the problem that a lot of municipalities had was when you transfer these harbors, They were in disrepair. And then the municipality had to accept the burden and do the repairs of their harbors. Granted, there is the 50-50 match on harbor fee or harbor construction, but there's a long waiting list for harbors throughout the state. We're a huge state in a vast coastal area, and, you know, we're all competing, and, I mean, that worries me. And to add to that, the American Society of Civil Engineers recently did a report card on harbors, and they gave us a D+. What's your solution as to getting that D+ up to at least C?
More investment and higher fees.
I can help them with that answer. I think going from an F- to a, well, they give us a, what was that grade they gave us?
D+.
D+. From an F- to a D+ is going in the right direction. it's all about the direction and the magnitude. So I think we're going in the right direction. I don't know why they gave us that grade. I've been through most of the harbors in Southeast, granted not out west. It's a long ways to go on my boat. But the vast majority of harbors in Southeast are in very good shape. They're fairly new. They got 50 amp 220. Some of them have 440. They got water. Not a lot of stray electricity. There's been huge improvements. And there's a few that are targeted to, you know, get upgraded, one in Wrangell this year. And hopefully we'll have time to touch on that list here. If you, I don't know if you have it in a slide format or on the matching grant one, or you can just talk about that list maybe as far as the what's on there this year.
Sure.
Just to show the public that are listening and watching at home.
I don't have a slide, Senator, but I will describe the list. We received 7 applications for this year's Harbor Facility matching grant program. They had an aggregate total of $18.1 million, and we ranked those projects in order per statute. We have to have the tier ones as the highest ranked. So the highest ranked project was from the city and borough of Wrangell for Shoemaker Bay for $5 million, followed by a project for the city and borough of Sitka at Crescent Harbor for another $5 million. And then we had 5 tier two projects. Eliason Harbor in Sitka for $1.5 million, the Valdez New Harbor for $5 million, Bar Harbor North in Ketchikan for $627,055, Cake Dock and Seaplane Float for $450,000, and the Skagway Harbor for $583,000. And what I will point out in this list is that these are just the requests on the state side. You have to remember that each one of these municipalities is offering an equal amount on their side of cash match. So really, if you take this whole list, this is $36 million worth of projects that have been submitted to the department.
Mr. Chair, first, most of those projects are in his district. I have one, and thank you. But I want to thank you for your mortgage fees. My municipality thanks you, and our harbor master especially thanks you.
I pay my monthly fee to the city hall.
You have to shovel your own snow.
Yep. But it is very expensive for those watching at home to build your own dock and drive your own pilings at maybe around $8,000 a piling, somewhere in there, and then a dock. So you're in it. $40,000 or more per dock. When I write the check to the Ports and Harbors in Juneau, it's more than other harbors in the region, but it's a substantially less than if I had to build it myself, by far. So we'll go ahead and continue.
Sure. And just wrapping up on this slide, I would like to add that This program has broad support from the coastal communities, as demonstrated by yearly resolutions by municipalities that support this program that are competing for it and municipalities that are not. They want the program to be there in the future when they need it, the Port Alexanders, the Junos, the Kodiaks, the Nomes, and Onalaska, along with the Alaska Municipal League. So the program, it seems to be working, as demonstrated by my next slide. You can see that the harbor grants have been across the state, north and south, east and west. To date, we've received 76 applications, which was $169.9 million worth of local match offered by the municipalities. So far, we have authorized 37 grants. 27 were tier ones, 10 were tier twos. Of the 37 grants, that amounted to $72.5 million in state aid, which, if due to the local matching grant requirement, has resulted in $144 million worth of construction activity and jobs for Alaskans in the last 8 years. So the one Corps of Engineer project that we have regards the Arctic Deep Draft Port Study. And let me pause here to talk about a unique requirement that the Corps has, which is the requirement for a positive benefit-to-cost ratio, or BC ratio. You're probably familiar with making transportation decisions based on the lowest project cost, but the Corps uses a different model. They evaluate alternatives based on a ratio of the net economic benefits to the nation as a whole as compared to lowest cost. So as a result, Alaskan projects must compete for limited federal Corps funds with other large ports in Los Angeles, New York, or those harbors along the Mississippi-Missouri River system. So the overarching goal of the Arctic Ports Study was to develop a system of Arctic ports in Alaska for regional ports and for the economic betterment of the region in Alaska and the United States. We started our study area looking at Nome and went in a clockwise fashion all the way around to the border of Alaska. This encompassed over 3,000 miles of coastline. From that, we identified 14 sites to study. Of those 14 sites, we shortlisted three sites: the Point Spencer, or what's commonly called Port Clarence site, the Port of Nome, and the Cape Riley, which is near the city of Teller site. From those three sites, looking at the purpose and need of the project to develop an Arctic port, the expansion of the existing Port of Nome was considered the preferred alternative. And this alternative would involve extending the existing causeways at the Port of Nome another 2,150 feet into the ocean, build a 450-foot-long dock, deepen the port from minus 22 feet to minus 28 feet, and this had a positive benefit-cost ratio of 1.75. But since the economics and the purpose and the need of this project was all based around the exploration of oil and gas in the Arctic, when Shell decided to pull out of the Alaska market and stop its Arctic explorations, the economics for the project fell apart. And so the Corps had to suspend the project in October of 2015. Up until that point, we had been planning that Shell Oil, Statoil, ConocoPhillips would pursue future drilling in the Arctic. And that is not on the near term at this point. So the project has stalled, but there's still hope. The current Water Infrastructure Improvements for the Nation Act, which is the new replacement for what used to be called WRDA, or the Water Resource and Development Act, has language in it that now includes regional impacts and effects for an Arctic port. And this would help Nome, which is a regional center for 28 outlying communities. And so the city of Nome is interested in pursuing this project, and hopefully the Corps will be able to rescope it and bring it back to life. When that happens, the department is most likely going to transfer its responsibilities in the project to the city of Nome, because the department is not in a position to own a port that is already locally owned by the city of Nome.
And before you run away, I got a couple kind of questions.
That ends my testimony. I don't have any further slides.
I got a couple for you.
Go ahead.
This is just kind of general. I've had some conversations lately with the floats concerning the ones built in, the older ones in Sitka, with invasive species. So this is an invasive species question. There's invasive species that are underneath our floats in that particular community. Eliason, Crescent, A and B, which pretty much is all the major float systems there. And I was just wondering if DOT's been tuned into that at all, or if there's a idea of how many other municipal-owned or state-owned harbors have invasive species growing in and on our float system.
Senator Sedman, I'm not up to speed with all the intricacies of the city and borough of Sitka's issues with those harbors that you've described. I did hear about it, but it seems like the requirements and the condition of what you're describing of those harbors is unique in each harbor and community. So
yeah, the concern,
we don't have a perspective on that.
Right. The concern I have is it's also in Ketchikan. I don't think, and I've heard it's not in Juneau, but maybe we could we'll have our office get in touch with you, because we're kind of putting out some feelers to try to figure out how widespread this issue is. And then once we get a handle on what we're actually dealing with, what, if anything, we can do about it. It has huge impacts on replication and demolition of the harbors, as far as having to take them off-site, barge them off-site, ship them to Western Washington or whatever. Very expensive. Crescent Harbor, which is on the list to be redone, is one of the harbors, and I think that harbor is going to be replaced in two stages, possibly, as I recall. So the and we haven't anyway. So I think that's something that we need to look into, and then maybe at a later date come back to this committee if it looks like it's spread out further than the two communities, and have a kind of a update and a discussion on what's going on. And there's different invasive species. Some are worse than others. And I'm no biologist, so I can't even hardly pronounce them, much less tell you anything about them.
Senator, we can do further research and get back to you.
Yeah, that would be helpful, because I think it's going to take a team effort between the state and the communities, and then along with how the Corps interacts with, you know, trying to keep this from spreading. The other one is derelict vessels within our harbor system. We have we'd have more of a discussion here today or at another day on this particular issue, but there is a piece of legislation in works at another committee at Resources that has had one hearing. And
92.
Yeah, 92, Senate Bill 92. So we'll see how that goes. That for the committee members, you may want to watch that, Senate Bill 92, and if you have input, you know, let Senator Giesel, the chairman, know, or speak to me about it, what have you, and we'll see where that particular legislation goes. That may be at some time a point of interest for this committee. Is I think this might be the committee jurisdiction on some of that stuff. We also have liveaboards, and I don't know, shifting gears a little bit, but from derelict vessels to liveaboards, and they're not necessarily related. But that seems to be handled more at the local level. I don't think there's any requirements that the state has.
Through the chair, there's none that I'm aware of.
Right. So that's a more of a local level issue, but that's something that maybe we need to have a discussion with the harbor masters sometime as far as how that is going. There seems to be some concerns with that as far as the percentage of slips within particular harbors, and each town has its own politics and flavor of, you know, what that looks like. One last thing, from the federal level, and I should have stopped you maybe on page 5 when we were going through and talking about federal programs, but this FAST Act, it's dealing with, there might be some funds for ports and harbors coming out of the feds in their endeavor to build the infrastructure of the country. Have you guys been working on that at all? Or?
To the chair, I have not, but are you asking about the Tiger Grant program, or is it other FAST Act grant programs?
I think it's under the FAST Act grant program. Isn't that right, Dave? Yeah.
We have not had an application that's come to us, where we're not pursuing anything at this time. We're ready to help and learn more about it.
Okay. Just saying, if Washington wants to build America, we could help with a list of few things to build. This is reference here tonight or this afternoon. You know, we can use quite a bit of harbor work around the state, infrastructure development. Community members have any other questions on the Senator Egan?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that brings up a question for me. Do you have any idea what the unfunded needs of harbors throughout the state are? Just curious. You probably don't have the answer, but
through the chair, Senator Egan, there was some information that was collected a couple years back, and I don't remember the number offhand, but I can get that to you.
I appreciate that.
You can get it to the committee, and we'll disseminate it out to all the members. And then if there's a synopsis of a little more detail of the Harbor Matching Grant Fund, if you have something that can be put together fairly quick to disseminate so our newer members are more, you know, get a flavor for that program a little bit.
Through the chair, sure.
I think it's one of the more successful things we've done. You're trying to deviate from that cycle of just building stuff and letting it fall down and then rebuilding it. We want to go build new stuff all the time.
Yep.
Any other questions for the DOT before we let them off the hook or off the dock? Seeing none, that concludes today. There's no other business to come before the committee. I hear rumors that we will have another bill maybe assigned to the committee, but our shelf is pretty light on committee work. We've been keeping it up, but we'll get with DOT on other issues that we want to take a look at here and as we pursue this. Anyway, the meeting adjourned.